Some people live rather interesting lives. Ho, ho, ho. Some people live rather interesting lives. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Campo, California, who really lives an interesting life. I live a very interesting life. And I'm surrounded by delightful, charming, interesting people. I like to kick them in the butt sometimes, but delightful, charming, interesting people. And we do delightful, charming, interesting things. Now this morning was the morning to set the clock ahead. And to set the clock ahead was a good thing to do. Except I should have thought of it last night, so I wouldn't think of it this morning. And so I didn't think of it last night, and I didn't think of it this morning. And I didn't think of it until I had a phone call. And then when I had a phone call, I thought, whoops, time to go up for breakfast. I'm late already. And so I left setting all my clocks ahead to later. Now, my computer clocks, they all set themselves ahead. Mm-hmm. So I think that's rather nice. I have four computers over at the house there, and I have my iPhone, and I have my iPod. I have two or three iPods, and I have several other gadgets. And all these things, now I wonder, does the printer set itself up to the correct phone through the internet that it is connected to? I doubt that. So, I was going through my house mentally here at the breakfast table, counting the number of clocks that I would have to set or be aware of at the Hermitage. Now, this is a one-room house. It's like maybe 25 by 30 feet. Not terribly big, but very nice. And in that one-room house, as I was counting, I was up into the 20s in clocks that are there. And that's not true. That's not true, because I have a box up in my cupboard over the sink that has watches that I have worn over the past years and I'm not wearing now. There's four of them there or more. And then in my what? What?
Has a clock?
Huh?
A recorder has a clock?
Yes, Ellen is pointing to my recorder and pointing to my mouth, trying to tell me that the recorder that I'm speaking on has a clock also. And that's correct. Mm-hmm. And Ingeborg, she says, well, what about your rings? Would they have clocks on them? Well, I don't have any clocks on my rings. They're quite expensive, but they're quite small. You really got to have good eyes to see it, although I can read my iPod, my iPhone, and I can read the internet emails on the iPhone, and I can read it very clearly. And that tiny, tiny type, I wonder what size type that is on the iPhone. Mm-hmm. Any guess on that? I think maybe about 8 point, 7 point, 6 point.
Eight, perhaps.
It is eight, but it's not too big. It's not too big. And I don't use reading glasses for it or anything else like that, you know. And I'm walking the path around here, and I'm looking at it, and I'm reading it very comfortably, very beautifully. It's amazing. I think everyone should have an iPhone with the eye materials on it, because it certainly would help you to improve your eyes, because you don't strain to see it. You just relax and look at it. Oh, you look at it really relaxed. If you strain to see it, you cut it off, and you shut it off. And this is the way it is with life, too. Yeah. Then we started counting clocks on campus. And we were counting the clocks that are in all of our vehicles. And we have the two expeditions. We have the Golden Eagle. We have the truck, the pickup truck. We have the Jeep doesn't have a clock in it. We have what else has a clock? That's about it, huh? So four clocks on the vehicles. And some of those vehicle clocks never get reset. I take time to set it sometimes. I just stop and set it and do it. Because it's a simple thing to do, but you have to do it with definition. So there's four more. Then we have six houses here. And in each of the houses are a plethora of clocks. In the retreats, there are maybe four or five clocks. There's one by each bed up there. And in the citadel, there's a number of clocks. And what did we say, about seven in the citadel, maybe, at least? And in the computers, you have two computers over there. And you have your the iPhone, that doesn't work anymore. But you have a telephone on your telephone. I mean, you have a clock on your telephone, you know. And all of those, cellular telephones. Thank you very much. And think of how many cellular telephones we have around here that are being used or not being used. And so then you start adding up all these clocks. And you think to yourself, now, when am I ever going to take time to reset them all? I haven't thought about the clocks in the Shangri-La for, you know, umpty-dumpty years. In fact, the batteries have worn out and I haven't even noticed it. And then the citadel that is in the Oasis, thank you, there are several clocks too. And I'm sure that their battery has run down over the past several years, because they only last usually about 2 years for a battery in these clocks. And then where else do we have clocks? We have clocks in the embassy. That's that little house down there with the swimming pool in the backyard. And that's nice. And now you have a clock on your swimming pool timer, you know, that makes the gadget run. You have one, two clocks on the walls back there. And then you have a clock in your publishing room. You have, or two of them, and then you got two computers in your publishing room, and you have in your office, Ellen. You have two computers. You have five or six clock, and you have an iPhone, and you have an iPod, and then your living room. You have three or four clocks. Some of them don't have batteries in them. And then in your kitchen, you have a number of them. Now, why am I doing all this counting on clocks? Well, all of us realize time is totally unimportant. If we were to live every moment in the now, what would happen to us? What would happen to us? We'd be doing some quite exciting things, wouldn't we? We'd be having some great and wonderful times. Now, Rex loves to show his possession of me. Rex is my beautiful golden retriever dog who just loves to come around and say, "Dad, you're mine," you know. And we do things together, and we do. And so, when he wants to assert his position, he will pick up my shoe and carry it around and throw it up and down and do things with it. And rather than let him ever get started on playing with my shoes, I say, "Bring it here." And he brings it to me. And so then he goes over and gets the other one too. And he brings them to me. But why does he want to hold my shoe? What is there about a shoe that gives a child, a cat, a dog, any loving young thing, possession of something like its master? Well, it's not necessarily the smell of the shoe. It could be. But it's more that the shoe is the foundation for the person who wears it. The person who wears it, the shoe gives them balance. The shoe gives them everything that it's very important. It's like the foot. And that's why dogs and kittens and children love people's shoes. And kittens will oftentimes sleep with their nose right down inside of the shoe and just feel so content and so wonderful. And this is true. This is true. This is where we all are. Now, how about you? What do you have that gives you the feeling of contentment, that gives you the feeling of belonging to your world? How about you? What have you claimed that makes you feel content in life? What makes you feel that you're doing everything right in life? Well, As I tell Rex, it's living in the now that makes the difference. If you live this moment as a happy moment, if you are the little kitten with your nose tucked down in your daddy's shoe, you know, you are in heaven. If why do the animals love to take people's shoes? They could take their shirt, they could take their gloves, they could take anything else, but mainly, I guess, the shoes are on the floor and get to them. And perhaps more realistically, that's exactly the case. But they love them because they are a reflection of the person who wears them. They are a suggestion of the person who wears them. And they know that the shoe is a happy time. When they get along with that shoe, if that person's going to go for a walk, that shoe's going to go with that person. They're going to put those shoes on. And so animals know this, and little children know this. And little children just love that. And we should learn to live in the now as much as they do. When a child cuddles their father's shoe or their mother's shoe, what are they doing? They're living in the presence of that loved one. When a dog is carrying his master's shoe, what's he doing? He's living in the presence of that. He doesn't mind giving it up because he knows he has contact. He knows that he's gotten attention. How little it is that can satisfy us and make us feel happy and feel like we have attention. How little it is that gives us this. Now, what do you want? What do I want out of my life? What do we want out of our experiences? Do we want all of the hairy experiences of changing all the clocks and bringing them forward or putting them back? Or do we want to live in the now? If I were to say to any one of you, as we are walking along some forest path, I'd say, what time is it? And you don't have a watch. And you don't have a reference that it took so long to walk from there to here, and when we were there it was that time, and so now it must be this time. You don't have that reference. What do? You sort of go to your inner clock. You don't look at the sky. You might look at the sky. You might say, well, the sun is almost setting. But when you push the clock ahead, as we have done today, you can't always have that as an assured reminder, because the clock is now the sun's going to set sooner tonight because it has been pushed ahead. And it's going to rise earlier in the morning because the clock has been pushed ahead. And so our internal clocks are out of balance because we try to equate our internal clocks to the outer. And when we equate our eternal clocks to what time it really is, then it really doesn't matter. We say, what difference does it make? What difference does it make what time it is? Are you having a good time? Are you enjoying your walk in the forest? Are you enjoying your moments of meditation? How many times have you been awakened from a meditation or a reverie where you have been in quietness and peace and just sort of puttering around doing whatever delighted you, and then someone came along and said, hey, are you ready? Ready for what? Well, dinner's going to be on the table in 10 minutes. Are you ready? And you're like brought back into this world from that world. And you've been in a reverie. You've been in a state of complete relaxation, a complete imagination. You can't imagine that the time has passed. And yet, it's not the time that's passed. It's just that a new activity is coming up. And then, if you're wise, you say, oh, no, great. And you turn off that adventure and get ready for the next one. Just turn it off. Let it go. Don't say, oh dear, I was right in the middle of something. Just turn it off. Just like a child playing in the sandbox. You say, sweetheart, supper time. And the child looks at all his toys there, and he says, I was right in the middle of something. And so he takes his hand and goes, chum, knocks down the castle he's built, and goes in the house. He doesn't knock down the castle because he's mad at the castle. He doesn't knock down the castle because he's angry at coming into the house. He knocks down the castle because that adventure is over. That adventure is done. When he goes out there, he's going to build a new castle. He's going to build a new adventure. He's going to build a new life. He's not going to go back to his old stories. And how wise that is. And how wise it could be for us if we could let the past go as easily as a child does. And not with anger, not with any feeling that of remorse or sadness that you don't have it anymore. But just, hey, that's over. That's over. I always like the one about the little boy jumping in the puddle, you know. His mother says, come in. And he just built his lake and his ocean and his city and his answer crawling around on the leaves and the little boats that are floating around on this water that is formed in the gutter where he had his little city that he built. And she says, supper time. So he stands up and he looks at his beautiful city and he says, well, okay. And he plotch right in the middle of it, and the water flies everywhere, and the city is gone. So he is now released of the past. He is now released of the game he is playing, and he's ready to go in and have a new adventure and have supper with the family. Yeah, we cling, we hold on to these things. In Star Trek, they had the Klingons. That was a nation, a type of people. And they were Klingons, and they were very miserable people because they were always clinging. They were always holding on to everything, you know. And I'm sure that the people who wrote these various adventures thought of all the various possibilities, you know, of things that were good and bad and indifferent and included them in the Star Trek. But and whatever was the craziest, stupidest thing in their imagination, they wrote into Star Trek. And today they're doing it. They hadn't thought of it up to that. Or if they had thought of it, they thought it was just outrageous. And of course it was outrageous. But now people are doing it. Now people are thinking these things. Teleporting between the ship and the ground. Not having to land the plane. Can you imagine a plane flying around the world? And you want to get off Chicago. And so you go into the dispatcher, and this is a machine that dispatches you. You go into a machine that dispatches you over Chicago, and boom, then you're down in Chicago. You're down at the waiting room or wherever it is you're going to be, and boom, there you go. And so then somebody else once gets off at Alabama, somebody else at New York, you know, and so you step in the machine, and so you're a little early. And so it still puts you in the right place because it angles wherever your location is. Your location is 2 points, where you are and where you're going. Not how you're getting there, not where it is. In fact, you wouldn't even have to get in the airplane. You go to the airport and you step in this dispatcher, boom, you're in Chicago from San Diego. And you're in Zurich from San Diego, or you're at Mariana's house from San Diego. Hey, cool, huh? I mean, you know, well, we could have one right here on the ranch, right here in the monastery. And you get into this dispatcher, and Ellen says, I think I'll go and visit Mariella. I was talking to her on the phone, and she had some ideas I wanted to go over. And she gets in her dispatcher, bah! She's over there. And Mariella got in her dispatcher, and bah! She was over here. And so now they're both in the opposite places. So now, well, you got to make up your mind where you're going, you know, what you're doing. And so there Ellen is in Lugano, in Switzerland, and wanting to talk to Mariella. And Mariella is sitting here at the monastery, and she's saying, well, as long as I'm here, let's have lunch. You know? And so isn't it wonderful? Now, is that impossible?
No.
Is that something, you know, that sort of does away with airplanes, does away with cars, doesn't it? Does away with all modes of transportation, because you're what? You're what?
I'm there.
I'm there. You're there. Wherever your thought is, you're there. You are wherever your thought is. Now, when you are omniscient or omnipresent and you're everywhere, that's not quite as interesting. Because when you're everywhere, you don't know that you're everywhere. You are everywhere, but you're not enjoying the awareness that you are. And so you want to learn to enjoy that. Now, these things are like falling out of an airplane without a parachute and walking away. Not walking away, but I mean being able to be mended so you can walk away. And wouldn't it be nice? Just imagine the paratroopers. Well, you wouldn't have to have paratroopers. You wouldn't have to have these things. The people would say, well, okay, now we're going to go over and we're going to do this or that. And so here we have 1,000 men, and you're over there. Okay, 1,000 men, we're not going to build barracks for you over there. We're not going to build houses for you over there. We're not going to make mess halls for you over there. When it's time to eat, you go to this point, and you're back at the mess hall where you are on the base. And after dinner, you take a half an hour break, and then you're back there, whether you want to be or not, because you got this little coin in your pocket that puts you on this program. And so then, well, it's time for you to be there. And then nighttime comes. You don't stay over there. You're back at your bunk. You're back at your own barracks or wherever you're staying. And if that night you got liberty, then you're off on liberty in the town that you were in. But hey, wouldn't it be fun to have liberty in a Himalayan monastery? Or, you know, in a Tibetan monastery? Wouldn't it be interesting? You're there. So you're there for 2 or 3 hours, and then you come back to your barracks, and you're in your barracks for the night, and then in the morning you're off on your duty call, wherever it may be, at the North Pole, South Pole, or under the ocean, wherever it may be. Now, these are crazy, unbelievable, unimaginable things, but we're imagining them, and if we can imagine them, they can be. Now, live in the now and enjoy them in the now. And remember, that's your instant illumination. That's just one little thought. And as I'm thinking of these outrageous thoughts, each of you are thinking even more outrageous thoughts. You're thinking, I think I'll go and have a talk with my mother. I haven't talked to my mother for a long time. Of course, she's been dead for all this 30, 40 years, but I'm going to have a talk with my mother. So, you have a talk with your mother. Now, do you want to have a talk with your mother then, or do you want to have a talk with your mother now, or you want to have a talk with your mother in the future? You want to have a talk with your mother wherever she may be, on whatever dimension she may be, you know, and is she going to recognize you when you go to that other dimension, and will she care, or will she say, hey, get lost, I've had 100 dimensions since I last saw you, and I've had 12 children on each dimension, and all of you are important to me, but, you know, go take care of your eyes. I was just a channel for having you come forth and be yourself and have fun. Now, crazy, oh Herb. You sort of let your imagination roar, don't you? Yeah, and isn't it fun? Isn't it fun? This is what life's all about. This is what timing is all about. And this is what I'm all about. Now, just know that as I create you, I don't say, I had 12 children here and 12 children there and 12 children there. What do I care about this? I care about you all. Anything I create, I care about. And I see being whole and perfect. And let me tell you one little thing before I say adios. Every person in my world, I care about. And I created every person in my world, whether at the monastery or at the seminar or my family, my personal body family, my mental family, my spiritual family, wherever. And just remember, I love my son. I love my ex. I love my grandson. I love my sisters and brothers and stuff. But who am I spending every day of my life with? What people are in my world on an everyday moment? Who is it that I am blessing with my whole heart, my whole spirit, my whole being? So every time I hear from you, wherever you may be, you're in my heart consciously. And if you're in Switzerland, or if you're in Germany, if you're in Africa, if you're in South America, if you're in New Zealand or Australia, if you're anywhere in the world and you're thinking about me, I'm thinking about you. And if you write or you call or you come and visit, you have my personal 100% attention any moment that I'm with you. And I would say, that's a nice thing. And I'm very blessed. So, when I hear from you, when I talk to you, when I see you, when I touch you, when I love you, which is a continual, unconditional thing, I'm with you. So, remember that. I care. Not that I want you to be different, but I care because I can see how wonderful you are right now. Your divine, ideal beingness right now. I love you. I love you. I love you.
I love you.